I was telling Pastor Tim the other day, I'm getting it down now. These trips on tend to cost me about $5,000. Each trip is about that much money. So when all the money came in last time, you know, that was the budget I set up, and that's about exactly where we landed. And so it was just really neat to see God go, okay, if that's the budget, here it is. And, you know, it came through some amazing people, including you guys. And it's just neat to see how it all worked out. And, you know, we took the trailer all the way out to Georgia and drove all the way back to Oklahoma. It kind of was weird because we're driving through and all of a sudden we're coming back. And I go, wait, I drove some of this route on the way down. I didn't realize we were on the Trail of Tears going down. So it was kind of neat to come back and go, oh, yeah, I remember this and I remember that. And so let's start with some prayer, and then we'll actually get into what we're talking about today. So, God, I pray that today you will speak to each and every one of us. I will say what you want me to say, not what I want to say. And, God, I just pray you speak to each and every one of us in our hearts and our minds. In Jesus' name, amen. So My eagle up there, I actually just took this picture this week, and I'm really excited about it. So I was driving down the road, and he was sitting on the side of the road, so I jumped out on 213, which is not a road you want to stop on in the middle of a snowstorm. And I'm like, nope, he's there, I'm getting it. So I stopped and took the picture, and I was so excited. So that's my little buddy. I've been driving around for 2 weeks. Every time I come through Afton, there's one sitting down here at the bridge. And so I'm like, well, I'm going to get a picture of that eagle. He has not been there for 2 weeks. Every other day he was there, but I've been driving around for 2 weeks with my camera in the car, and he wasn't. And then I was taking my daughter to school, and this one was on the side of the road. And I thought, well, I got to go pick my daughter up from school, or she's going to be mad at me. So then I went, picked her up, and I came back, and he was still there. So I thought, well, there it goes. But, yeah, they're amazing creatures. And, you know, there's something about them when you see them. You just go, wow. There's something majestic about them, and God did something with them in some way. I don't know. But I wanted to share, to start off, a short little video that we did while I was on the road. And then we'll get into what all we did over that trip that was now like 3 months ago. It's hard to believe. But, yeah. So if my clicker works, hey, we're working. So this all started a few years ago. Actually, I think it started when we were up in Pine Ridge 2 years ago. And 5-0, Jimmy Muskrat and I began talking like, hey, we need to do a retracing of the Trail of Tears and go out there. And we went back and forth on it. And for like 2 years, we were trying to make this work. And all of a sudden, some doors started to pop open. And we said, okay, it's time. We're going to do this. The Trail of Tears is a very interesting thing, and for those of you who don't know, there's actually multiple Trails of Tears. So you can see they all start from over in the Georgia area, and then they go all the way over to Oklahoma. And this was all due to the Indian Removal Act, and basically the idea was they found gold over in the mountains, and they wanted the gold. And so there had been long-lasting treaties with these tribes, and then all of a sudden they were like, no, we want to undo that, and they started moving people out. What's very interesting is that the people who signed the Indian Removal Act Treaty, the Cherokees who were involved, they were actually not in leadership with the Cherokee people. They were not supposed to have the right to go and speak on behalf of the Cherokees, but they did anyways, and they signed these documents. And Cherokee leadership was very upset about it. They didn't want to go along with it, but they basically had to at the end of the day. It began in 1838 as part of the Indian Removal Act by Andrew Jackson. Now, one of the interesting things about Andrew Jackson that I came across was in 1813, there was this raid on Fort Mims by the Bad Creek Indians, who went into Fort Mims, and they basically decimated the fort. They killed everybody in there. Andrew Jackson was one of the first guys to get down there to help with the cleanup of the bodies and everything like that. And so one of the interesting things is when you look at history, you always go, okay, why? Why did this person end up doing the things they did? And I honestly think that that situation had an impact on why Andrew Jackson did the things he did later in life. I think he still had some anger and some bitterness. Probably, I mean, the stories of what happened down there was very disgusting and gross, what the native people had done to the people of Fort Mims. This is not to say this was the first, like, bad thing that happened. There was things that happened from the white man onto the natives before that triggered this. So it's the whole background is a tit-for-tat game of, okay, if you're going to do this, then we're going to do that. And then the other, and it just keeps going back and forth. And so what happens is you end up in 1838, Andrew Jackson signs this Indian Removal Act. As many as 20,000 Native Americans were moved from out east to Oklahoma. And they came from all these different tribes, the Cherokee, Choctaw, Chickasaw, Creek, Seminole. And they were moved on this 1,500-mile trail out to Oklahoma. Now, if you see where they're from out on the East Coast, it's this beautiful rolling mountains and gorgeous land. And then they get to Oklahoma where you can almost see from one side of the state to the other. And during the trail, over 4,000 people died. So this has left a major scar on the Cherokee people. They are very hurt by this. It's a frustrating thing. And what was really neat for us was we ended up going to this Native American museum focused on the Trail of Tears. It was a Cherokee museum on their history, but it also dealt with the Trail of Tears. And what was, you know, when God starts setting things up on these trips, it's very neat. So we had got there, and the guy goes, well, we don't do tours anymore through the museum. And we thought, oh, okay, well, that's kind of sad. And Jimmy's like, well, you know, we're from Oklahoma. And that, he goes, oh, really, where are you from? I'm from this town. Oh, I'm from the next town over. And so he goes, all right, well, you guys get in free. You don't even have to pay. So we said, okay. So we start going through the tour. And all of a sudden, he pops out and says, hey, I want to walk with you guys. I'll give you a tour. It freed up. I can come through and talk to you about everything. He's in his early 20s, but he's one of the smartest guys I've ever remembers history, you know, the stuff that I can't do, which is why my history grades have always been so bad. If I don't have a PowerPoint, I could never tell you any of this information. It just wouldn't happen. So it's really neat. So he jumps out and he starts going with us. It takes about 5 minutes of his tour to realize he does not like white people, right? He's a real Cherokee guy who does not like white people. He's a traditionalist. He believes in all the traditional ways in the spirit world and all these kinds of things. And basically, the white man is bad. And so it took about 5 minutes to figure that out from the things he was saying and go, okay, I know where we're at. And so what happened was as we're traveling through this museum, he keeps talking more and more, and I'm seeing more and more anger coming out of him and things like that. And we just had an incredible time, though, listening and learning from him. I like those kinds of people because they're going to tell you the truth. And, you know, when you're doing this kind of work, you really need to know both sides of the story. And so as we're going through and he's sharing these things, I was like, okay, I need to talk to this guy a little bit more, but how am I going to get this moment with him? And so at the very end, I remembered, while studying the Cherokee, I came across a story of a thing called the Judicalla Stone. It's a stone down in Georgia. For whatever reason, it's out in the middle of a field, but it has all these etchings in it. The Cherokee people say it was linked to two boys who stole from a giant's property. And the giant chased them and slammed his hand down on the rock, left his handprint, and then there's all these other etchings in the stone. And it predates anything that we can come up with. And so I start asking, I said, where's this Judicalla stone where the giant's handprint is? He goes, oh, it's not too far from here. It's just 20 miles down the road. It'll take about 30 minutes to get there. And I go, really? He's like, yeah. And we start talking. And the next thing I know, he goes, well, let me show you this. And now the whole tour's done. And he takes me to the back, and we start talking. And he's asking me questions. Well, why would you think you need to come share faith and all this kind of stuff? And now he's talking with me, and we're having a real conversation. He goes, well, let's go back out and sit down. So we went back out into the foyer and sat down. We talked for about 15 minutes. And I had the chance to sit there and have a real conversation with him. And I told him about what happened in Pine Ridge, where I had a lady who did not like white men. And I said, you know, by the end, she came to me and said, hey, you come back whenever. And I go, that's what we're looking to do. We want to tear down these walls. He's asking me, well, why is your faith right and this faith isn't? I said, why wouldn't your faith line up to some extent with the Christian faith? You guys believe in a flood, right? Oh, yeah, we believe in a massive flood. You believe in two people started everything, right? Yeah, we do. Okay, doesn't that start to line up with Scripture? Which you went to church, you understand those points. And his head starts to go, wait. And as I told him about this lady who did not want a white man out at Pine Ridge, he goes, you know, I was going to tell you the same thing. You can come back whenever you want. And so I took a guy who clearly did not like white men, and he starts telling me secrets of the Cherokee peoples, things that nobody really talks about. And, you know, some of the, in the spiritual world, because they don't talk about it because they're scared the spirits will come back and get them. And so nobody talks about these things. And he's sitting here talking to me about it. And he's unloading all this cool information to me. And I'm going, okay, this is neat. And so his name was Joseph. And it was just a neat experience to have with him. And he goes, the one thing I don't like is the Christians come in here and they bring their pamphlets and they try to minister to us on the tour and all this stuff. And I go, I got to get this guy my information, but I don't want to give him like my ministry packet because he's made it clear that this is the problem. So I ran up to my car and I grabbed a business card. I go, all this has is my information. Then he can't be mad at me. And I took it. I said, man, if you ever want to connect with me again, get a hold of me. And that was just one of those cool things that really happened on this trip where I had the opportunity, you know, I don't know where he's going to land, but I know that that day we chiseled away some ice, and that's what I was looking to do, and that's what was really neat about that whole situation. So this was our whole trail. I drove all the way from Wisconsin down to, I think it was Clayton, Georgia, and then we went back and drove over to Oklahoma. So it was a lot of driving. I think it's somewhere around 2,500 miles altogether. I needed oil change by the time I got back. So that was fun. We did it over 2 weeks, about a week and a half to 2 weeks that we did this trip. And we met some great people down in Cherokee, North Carolina, and down in that area. And incredible people. Very neat people. And they've been through so much as a culture. And, you know, It's interesting because even like Jimmy Muskrat, who lives in Oklahoma, he's part of what's called the Kituwa Band. And the Kituwa Band of the Cherokee people are considered to be the sellouts because they were the ones who actually went on the Trail of Tears and went out to Oklahoma. And so a lot of, like even Joseph, the guy we met, he was originally from Oklahoma, but he moved back to the homeland. And that's the way they look at it. So we had just an incredible time of learning the history aspect of it. And this was us at Kituwa, North Carolina. Now, Kituwa, North Carolina is considered to be basically the Garden of Eden to the Cherokee people. This is where they say they came from. Their ancestors showed up here one day. They don't know how, but this is it. And so this was the original property, and it's there. And then basically they began spreading out from there. We went here after meeting with Joseph. Now, the interesting thing was when I met with Joseph, Joseph starts telling me about this whole spirit world and how there's things in the spirit world with the Cherokee people that will protect the land. It will come out and attack people who aren't there, even their own Cherokee. If the Cherokee are out of line, they will do things. And like he's really unloading this information on me. And I go, okay. We got to Kituwa, which is considered to be a sacred land. And off to the left of this picture, there's a mound, and that is considered to be where the original chief's home was. What ended up happening was I took my drone up and was flying it, and this is kind of what ended up happening, and I was not very happy. And so I'd been flying it for a while, and then boom, it literally fell out of the sky for no reason whatsoever. What's really weird is all the film on the card was corrupt. The only thing I got back was what actually uploaded to my phone immediately. And so, because the way the drones are, they will upload the video to your phone, but it's a lower quality. But then if anything happens, you can go back and pull it. And this is what happened. So my drone crashed to the ground from, I think it was about 200 feet in the air, broke into multiple pieces, and that was that. I sat there and just watched it, and it was amazing to see what happened, which is not what you want to see when you're using your tools and they break on you. But pieces went flying everywhere, and I'm waiting to hear like a shotgun go off, you know, or something. Nothing. It just randomly blew up. So that was kind of one of those, okay, was this a spiritual attack? What was going on? And you sit there and go, all right, I don't want to read too much into it. And then Jimmy Jr., little Jimmy, he's sitting there goes, that wasn't right. And they go, yeah, I don't know what it was, but it wasn't right. I can tell you that. So, and that was neat because it kind of came right after this guy is telling me about the spiritual world. And the weird thing about this was I had been flying it for like 5 minutes, and I thought, well, I want to get a shot of this spot where the chief lived. And that's when it crashed. So it was very interesting. I'll put it that way. To be honest, if you ask me, yeah, I would say it was a spiritual thing and something went after it. Yes. Oh, well, thankfully it landed outside the ground, so I was able to go get it. But yeah, I sat there in awe when it fell, and I'm going, what just happened? I was just dumbfounded by it. So we are in the process of looking for a new drone now, which this one was gifted to us by another ministry when we did a project for them, and they said, well, you're not going to charge us. We'll buy you a drone. So now we're looking at another one. But yeah, that was fun to see. And, so this whole trail was very neat. So we started off in North Carolina, and we began traveling across, and we stopped at certain places along the way. One of the neat places that we went was up this hill, and at the very top of the hill, we ended up meeting this guy. And it was weird because we had been looking for the Trail of Tears for a while. We have like a map, but it's not a really good map, so we're just kind of following what we think we know. And all of a sudden, we start coming to these signs that say Trail of Tears, Trail of Tears. And we go, okay, we're on the right route. We get to the top of the first mountain, and this was a horrible like switchback going up all the way up to the top. And I meet this guy at the top, and he says, what are you guys doing? And I go, oh, no, now we're going to have problems. And he goes, what are you filming? And I said, we're doing a documentary on the Trail of Tears. My friend over there is Cherokee. He goes, well, did you go to Blythe Ferry? No, I didn't go to Blythe Ferry. He goes, you have to go to Blythe Ferry. It's down at the bottom of the mountain. I just came up the mountain. I don't want to go down the mountain again. He said, you got to go back down the mountain. I said, okay. He goes, you're going to go to Blythe Ferry, and you're going to find the place where they brought the Cherokees and stashed them for, they had a holding area, and then they put them on these boats and sailed them across the river, and a bunch of them died because the crafts that they were on tipped over. They were on like rafts and things like that, and they would tip over because the water currents. And it was the middle of winter, so they began tipping over. So he said, okay, we're going to go back and see this place. So I said, Jimmy, we got to go. He's like, all right, here we go. We go back down the mountain, and we find the place. We pull up, and it's closed. Nobody's there. He's like, oh, well, that's okay, but we could walk around and see. They had a lot to see, and you'll see in a little bit there's some stones that had, like, Jimmy Muskrat's name on it, his family Muskrat. And so we're sitting there kind of looking around, doing some shots, and all of a sudden this lady shows up, and I go over and say, ma'am, do you know anything about this place? She goes, yeah, I'm the curator of the property. I go, you're what? And she said, yeah. And I said, well, we're talking. She goes, I wasn't supposed to be here today. It's my day off, but we had some guys come in and use the property, so I'm just coming in to make sure they cleaned up and all this stuff. And I'm going, okay, this is really weird. How did you end up here on your day off out in the middle of nowhere? She ends up going, I go, well, this is Jimmy Muskrat. I go, he's one of the riders of the Trail of Tears. He does the bike ride. She goes, oh, really? Yeah, he was one of the first ones. She goes, well, they still come through here every year. Why don't you guys come inside? I'll show you around. And so she takes us in and starts showing us all this historical stuff that they have at this museum. And it's just a tiny little cabin that's been turned into a museum on this property. And so she's telling us all the history of it. Basically, what happened was this was a stopping point on the Trail of Tears. There's one section on the property that they know for sure was the exact path that the people walked, whereas some of it's kind of up in the air. There's one spot that there's a wood path, and they go, this is, we know for sure the people walked here. And then they have these stones out there, and the stones are marked to represent every family that came through on the Trail of Tears and stopped at this location. And so we started looking at that. Jimmy finds his family name in a couple of places. All the muskrats are actually related. So every time he finds a muskrat, it's somebody who was his family coming through. As we began to talk, now, one of the things I forgot to mention was Jimmy originally did this back in the 1980s on a bicycle. He rode all 1,500 miles on a bicycle up and down these mountain passes. And I go, Jimmy, you rode a bike up and down these mountains? He's like, yeah, we do 60 miles a day. And I'm going, that's a lot, you know, and things. And he goes, as we talked, he said, when I got to this point, this is where I gave up. He goes, when they started telling me about the women having to carry their babies through the river and try to save their babies, and the babies were drowning and all this stuff, he goes, that's when I got filled with anger. He goes, I threw my bike to the side and said, I'm not finishing it. One of the guys came up to him and said, no, you need to keep going. And they talked to him and kept going. When we got here, I noticed a shift in Jimmy again. And when we got back, we started talking. He says, yeah, when we got to that point, he said, I was ready to leave. He goes, I was ready to give up again. He goes, but then God started to speak to my heart. He said, last time I did this trail and I got angry, I didn't have God in my heart. And the anger overcame me. But this time I began to realize something. Those ancestors that came through, the old Cherokees that had come through, they never knew that their grandson or great-grandson or great-great-grandson would go on to carry the scriptures and the gospel. They didn't know that that would ever happen. And he said, I was all of a sudden filled with an encouragement because now I understood what we were doing. And that was one of the neat things about this thing, you know, as we go forward and we're starting to work on the production of putting it all together and putting the video together, we came up with the idea of calling it the Trail of Tears Reversing the Curse. And as we went to these different places, Jimmy would pray about reversing the curse. And, you know, that was the idea. He had witnessed firsthand what that curse felt like in the 1980s when the anger came in and took over. And now he was coming back with hope. And saying, no, there's something better. When I told you about the roads, these are the roads that they actually walk the people up on. And this is just one of the clips. But that's kind of the path of what they were taking the people up on. So if you think you're walking with thousands of people and military garrisons and whatever to keep the people moving, this is what they were going up. You can understand why there's anger and bitterness to this day among the Cherokee people. One of the interesting things, this is where Jimmy drives me nuts sometimes. We finish the trail, right? We get all the way back to Oklahoma. He goes, all right, let's go to basically the Cherokee capital. We're going to go to their building. We go to their building. We got to get permission to film. Cherokee do not like you filming on their property unless you have permission. We go in. We talk to this lady. She says, who are you? Jimmy says, I'm one of the original writers of the Trail of Tears. Really? Yes. So we have this little back and forth. We'd like to film. Okay, let me go get this guy. And she comes out with this guy. He comes out. We talk with him. We take a picture with him. He gives us both little pins from Cherokee Nation. It's one that says, thank you, Wado. And one that says, it's the seal of the Cherokee people. We leave. We go back. And later that day, Jimmy goes, yeah, it was so nice that we met the deputy chief of the Cherokee people. I said, what do you mean the deputy chief? He goes, oh, yeah, that guy's the second in charge of all the Cherokees in the world. I go, Jimmy! Why didn't you tell me? He goes, I thought you knew. I said, well, how would I know who's the deputy chief of the Cherokee people? So they gave us permission, and we were able to film some closing scenes on the property at the end of the Trail of Tears. And then we got to meet the deputy chief of the Cherokee people. And he was kind of neat because he came to me and said, you know, it's really neat what you're doing. And he was encouraging us to keep doing it. So that was kind of nice to actually have somebody high up say, yeah, keep doing what you're doing. I mentioned that we came to this museum. These are those stones that I talked about. And this was a very humbling place to come and realize thousands of people, they say, died at this one location because of the way the rafts tipped over. And moms had to leave their babies behind. And so this was just a little bit of kind of looking at that area.
Locations like this one make this trip more difficult than other places, as this is one of the locations where people were brought and held. As many as 14,000, with 2,000 people dying within the Army's movements and 1,400 dying in water transportation. These are the places where the names say so much. And our friend Jimmy has found his family's name on multiple spots. It's something.
So that was a very humbling place to be at. And even watching it now, it's like, wow, to understand what that spot was. I think that's when the whole thing became real. You know, we went out there and you go, okay, it's history. But then when you stop at a place like that, it's not history anymore. It's somebody's story. You know, it's Jimmy's story. His family name was right there. This is not history. This is his life. This is where his family came through. It's part of who he is. And you go, okay, this is now a very different thing. And we continue to do the trail and travel on from there. But that was the point where I think we kind of got, okay, we've now really found what this is about. And that's when we said, okay, at least for me, I'm sitting there going, I still don't know the angle for the video, right? You go to do a video and you got to have an angle. What's the angle? What are we trying to do? And that was the point where I said, okay, I get it. It's Jimmy's story of doing this trail before Christ and then doing it after Christ has come into his life and what it means and what that impact has had. I can do all things through Christ who strength gives me strength, or through him who gives me strength. We all know this verse, right? We all quote it for everything. We say, oh, I can do all things. People always ask me when I do these trips, oh, how do you do it? I don't know. It's what God called me to do. It's weird. If God calls you to do something and it's a strange thing to do and he calls you to do it, you usually don't sit there and go, oh, this is weird. You go, this is what God called me to do. Most people would look at Pastor Tim and go, you did what? You gave up a career. You came over here. You're pastoring for X number of years. You're nuts. Why would you do that? And he goes, this is what I've been called to do. It's not weird to me. This is what God put on my life. This is what we do. And there's things in each and every one of our lives. Some, maybe, you know, you have a ministry with dealing with homeless people. And people, oh, I couldn't deal with homeless people, you know, and all the problems that come with it. I couldn't deal with social work, dealing with children who have been abused. I couldn't deal. And there's all these things, right, that we come up with, I couldn't deal with. But yet when you're in those things, that's what God's called you to do. You go, yeah, I can do it. And so we often look at this verse, I can do all things through him who gives me strength. But we forget that there's a part before that. It says, I know what it has, what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all this through him who gives me strength. This verse is not necessarily meant to be the uplifting verse that we always take it to be. Like Pastor Tim the other day is telling us he wanted to redo his carpet. He was able to do all things through Christ because he hired some guys to come in and do the work for him. That is not what this verse is referring to. This verse is referring to all the hardships that go along in life, and you can overcome it. Things like, hey, the church doesn't have money for, not this church, but church doesn't have money to pay the mortgage this month. How are we going to keep going? The pews are empty. What are we going to do? I don't know, but God's given me strength. I'll keep going. You know, the whole idea here of I have had learned to be content in every situation, whether well-fed or hungry. And, you know, a few years ago, we went out to Pine Ridge, and I shared with you guys, we knew we had to go, so we'd sleep on the ground. And I swear, I know the Bible says not to, but when you sit there and you go, I swear that God honored that very situation where Jimmy and I both said, if we have to sleep on the ground, we will. And the next thing you know, we got put into a brand new men's shelter that was empty, had air conditioning and everything. And you go, wow. You know, if we learn to be content, the problem is we always try to be in control of everything. 2 Timothy chapter 4 says, I solemnly charge you in the presence of God, of Christ Jesus, who is to judge the living and the dead, and his appearance and his kingdom. Preach the word, be ready in season and out of season. Reprove, rebuke, exhort, and with great patience and instruction. For the time will come when they will not endure sound, when men will not endure sound doctrine, but wanting to have their ears tickled, they will accumulate for themselves teachers in accordance to their own desires. And I will turn away their ears from the truth and will turn aside to myths. But you, be sober in all things, endure hardships, do the work of the evangelist, fulfill your ministry. Being in ministry is not easy. It never was meant to be. If you're watching The Chosen and you start to see the hardships, I like The Chosen. I'm not saying it's completely scripturally correct. They've taken some liberties, but I'm okay with it because of the way they've done it. And you sit there and watch and go, I never thought about that. Oh, wait, they had to do what? You know, when you read through the scriptures and you go, oh, this is such a nice story. No, it's not a story. It's history. It's what really took place. And when you hear about these things that Jesus went through, where the mobs were turning on him and the people, you know, one of the things I found interesting, Jesus was a rabbi, right? He was brought up probably at 12 years old. He was bar mitzvah, just like every other 12-year-old boy. His family was involved with the local synagogue. He probably knew some of these rabbis and the Pharisees that were coming up against him. He had grown up with them to some extent. And now they're coming up against him. And, you know, this is like the reality of what's going on in these stories. One of the things that's interesting, though, about this passage is, for the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but wanting to have their ears tickled, they will accumulate for themselves teachers in accordance to their own desires. This is probably the most dangerous thing for people who share the gospel, but it's also the most dangerous thing for those of us who listen to teachers. We have to be very careful that those who are sharing are teaching us the correct things. Otherwise, we go back to this, I can do all things through him whose strength gives me strength, and forget about this whole part up here. We forget that we may still have to go through hardships. We forget that things may be difficult. You know, one of the crazy things about this trip, and you guys were so great to come out and pray over it, was the fact that God supplied this camper days before we left. You know, and the way that whole thing worked out, that it was a $24,000 camper that had been marked down one time and it was marked down again. And the guy said, well, look, it's only a couple thousand over what you're looking at. The person that was going to pay said, no, I'm only going to pay this much. And then said, yeah, why don't we just go ahead and do that? It's brand new. It's got warranty. Everything's covered. Let's go that route. I knew God was going to supply one. I did not know God would supply a brand new one. These things, when we step out and what God has called us to do, and I think this is where many of us as Christians miss the boat. God has put things in your heart. He has put things for you to do, for you to share your message, for you to minister among certain groups. And maybe things are not going the way you thought they were supposed to go. And God is saying, that's because I'm waiting to bless you once you do the things that I asked you to do. It's great that we all have a loving heart, right? We're Christians. We're supposed to love. We may not like the person next to us, but we love them. Right? We won't go on vacation with them, but we'll cry at their funeral. Right? Stop thinking about that person right now. We have that ability. We're supposed to love people. We give our lives for each other. The Bible says, no greater love has any man than to lay down his life for another. What happens when you get put in that position? Will you do it or no? And that's the thing. God, and laying down your life is not always to die. A lot of times it's giving up every comfortable thing that God has given you or that you have found for yourself and go, you know what? I have to give this up because God is calling me to do something else. And then are you going to do that? You got a great job. It's a wonderful job. Pays you more than you ever thought. God says, hey, step away from that and I want you to go to Africa and be poor. Whoa. And then all of a sudden, things at your job start getting difficult and hard, and you're reading Jonah right now, and you kind of understand what this is going. But wait, God, I want you to do this other thing. But God, this is the really nice place. I like to be here. Yes, but I have something better for you, if. But God, can we talk? Can we negotiate? You know, I can go to church every Sunday, maybe one Wednesday every couple of weeks. If I do that, no. I got something better for you. when we do these trips, one of the hardest things for me sometimes, and yet it's weird because, kind of like I was saying, I enjoy when people don't like me when I come in, just because. Like the lady in South Dakota who looked at me and kind of scuffed at me and scoffed at me and said, "Hey, why are you here?" And, you know, this guy at the museum. And then at the end, you start to see where you start to win them over. It's not the easiest place to go or thing to go to some place where you know they don't like you just because of who your ancestors were. And I don't even know if my ancestors were tied to any of this to begin with. But now I'm disliked because I stepped foot on the wrong property. It's very difficult. And it's uncomfortable. But when we did this trip, one of the things that I really thought was incredible was to watch what Jimmy went through on this trip. This was uncomfortable for him. Very uncomfortable. And I think he approached it going, "Oh, I can do this. This will be great. We're going to have fun and we're going to, you know, do all of this." And all of a sudden, once we got to that location, things kind of started to shift. And it was, this isn't easy. This isn't fun. This is hard. My family came through this place and they, maybe a couple of them died even here. And so I took a moment and I said, "Jimmy, can you share some of what you're going through?" And so he kind of talked to us for a moment.
My thoughts is the cry, the pain, the suffering. Then I read the decisions the president, the governors made, you know, to evict the Cherokee people from their land. Nothing in their back. They took everything from them, you know. And this place here is called, I found a muskrat on the wall. And I read what they had, decisions they made, the removal. And I read here, you know, how many remain and how many families, and it's great history here, and a lot of history what our ancestors went through. These walls are talking about history, that Andrew Jackson and the governors, everybody that wanted the natives out, take their land, take their property, take their homes, take everything they have, even the corn, their garden, everything, and you know, the Trail of Tears is me and Doug and LJ, we've been traveling. There's a lot of places we didn't get to cover. A lot of places that the Trail of Tears has a lot of history here. What our ancestors went through, but the history is when I was 13 years old, I received a lot of anger. You know, to hear about what our ancestors went through, what they faced, what they went through, and I believe that's passed on generation. You know, but I ended up getting saved year 2000, and me and Doug and LJ, we've been praying about this to come back. And I'm reading the history of whatever governor, the president, you know, signing this, and evict them, you know, removal, and to the western side of Oklahoma, and it's a trail that we don't realize what our ancestors went through. You know, we don't realize the things they faced. They couldn't make decisions back then. They could not make decisions like we do today for our families, for the future and everything. Their future was in the treaties that were broken. Treaties broken left and right. Treaties broken everywhere. And you can read it here where they did not care the decisions they made back then. They did not care about the kids, the family, the Trail of Tears. Some ran, some got away, some escaped, you know. And 16,000, this here, there was 16,000 here, the original trails here, and we thank the Lord for finding it, you know. And I'm starting to read the letters and treaties and all that, and there were so many against the natives, you know. They just like, you know, "Hey, let's kick them out." They didn't care, you know, forced to leave. And it is sad. It is a lot to read about, you know, what our ancestors went through, you know. But we can't do nothing but yesterday. But we can do something about today. You know, it's why we're going through this trail, praying, seeking God, you know. And I just thank the Lord for my ancestors and reading the names of muskrats on the wall over there. And there's so many names there, so much history, so many families, you know, what they faced, what they seen, what they went through, you know. My, aunt, we blessed today. You can't shut down God's plan. And thank the Lord for the trail He walked to Calvary. That's the only way we're going to reverse the curse on this nation, the Trail of Tears. And that's what we're here to do, you know. And we all from the same dirt pile. Let's come together. Let's come together in unity, one accord. And, you know, reverse the curse. Not just the Trail of Tears, your family. You know, your tribes. Everybody's got history. Not just tribes. Every family has history. There's hope. So for the future, it's in Jesus. I want to make a difference. I want to do something for this nation, my tribes, my families. And I thank God that I don't have to worry about it up ahead. But treaties are broken, but not the covenant of Jesus Christ will never be broken. He'll never fail, never let you down. We here to reverse the curse on the Trail of Tears and talk about the trail Jesus walked on Calvary. That's our hope. That's our faith. That's our trust.
So that's just a little taste of what the video is going to be about. And now, like I said, I had told Pastor Tim, he said, can you come in on the 5th? And I said, oh, we were talking dates and stuff. And I said, well, the 5th would be best. Let's see. I'm going to start working part-time. I've been doing a little part-time job this week with friends that have a flower company getting ready for Valentine's Day. So we've been cutting flowers all week. And so if you're looking for good flowers, they're at Walgreens and Quick Trip and some other places. If you find them, I probably chopped them. On top of it, as of last night at 8 o'clock, I finished my bachelor's degree in marketing. So I am completely done with that now. And so I have free time, and I can start working on more things and get into stuff. So it's very nice to see some stuff kind of free up. And I said, ooh, I get to go home from church tomorrow and not work on homework. It's wonderful. So, but you know, what Jimmy said there is so important, that there's a curse on many of our lives. Looking at my family, you know, we grew up in a home, my parents were Christian, my grandparents are Christian, on both sides. And, you know, what's weird is like my grandpa's, and on my dad's side, him and my grandma, they were not saved. And what ended up happening was they went to a tent meeting here in Rock County at one point. Way back, some friends of theirs that lived across the street basically dragged them to church. And they attended a church that was down the road, but it was basically a very liturgical church. They'd show up, sing some hymns, read, and then leave. Well, they went to this tent meeting here in Rock County. And it's funny because my grandpa's telling me the story about what happened. And the people that invited them the first night they went, and one of the nights was bring your pet. And my dad and his brothers had a monkey. So they took the monkey to church. But then my grandpa went the next night, and one by one, the kids went up for the altar call. And the next thing you know, my grandpa went up. He turned from everything right away. Was into drinking and things like that, gave it all up. Walked away from all of it and really changed his life. You know, and you go, okay, cool. And now his kids all profess Christ. There's sometimes, though, a curse over us that will hold us in the same routines over and over and over again. And we can't break free. And a few weeks ago, Pastor Tim was speaking about something, and it perked my ear. And I said, wait a minute, there's actually cultural curses as well. Things that we hand down from generation to generation through our cultures. Things like, oh, you're Irish, you have a bad attitude. Wait a minute. A lot of us use that as an excuse. I'm Irish. Oh, I'm Scottish. I think anybody from Europe can use it in some way, shape, or form, except for Switzerland. The rest of us, though, we all can use something like that, right? I'm married to a Puerto Rican. Oh, they got plenty of excuses like that. Puerto Rican women, they can go for weeks on their excuses for why they got a short temper or whatever. True Irishmen, we can go forever. My wife said, oh, I thought you were Scottish. I did one of those DNA tests that came back, I'm Irish. I said, ah, there's my excuse. These are the things, though, that we can take on as part of our personality. Oh, I'm an alcoholic because, you know, my culture was alcoholic for so many centuries. And we start to take these things on, and when Pastor Tim talked about it, I can't remember who we were talking about, but you were talking about there was a people group in the Bible who were cursed because of something they did. And so the people group were cursed, and then it went on to say something about, and their generations thereafter will remain cursed. Wait a minute, that's cultural. That's not bloodline, that's cultural. And there are things that we need to be aware about and go, God, if there is something in my life that I need to break off, if there is anger and bitterness because of an experience my family went through a generation or two ago, how do I overcome that? Jimmy is sitting there saying, there is anger and bitterness as a cultural curse among the Cherokee people because of what happened on the Trail of Tears, and we need to reverse that curse. You know, it's difficult. One of the things that I had to deal with growing up was my dad, even though he claimed to be a Christian, cheated on my mom multiple times. And as an adult, I had to go, wait a minute, this is possibly a generational curse for me. This is something I need to be aware of. So when my wife and I got married, I cut ties to almost every girl that I ever knew. And it wasn't to say that I had relationships or anything. She goes, oh, why don't you jump in the car and go with so-and-so to go somewhere? I said, no, I won't do that. And she said, why? I said, because I don't know if that story from my dad's life is something that I need to contend with, and I don't want to put myself in a place where I have to contend with that. And so my wife and I had kind of this little back-and-forth disagreement at the beginning. She said, I don't get why you can't just jump in the car and go with somebody. I said, because it would not be right to you. Because I don't know where that thing could pop up at some point in time in my life. So I go, okay, that is something I need to guard myself against. Some people have the same thing with alcohol. Their parents were alcoholics. Their grandparents were alcoholics. And they go, look, I cannot even be around alcohol because if I do, there's a chance that I could kick something off and become a slave to it. And so one of the neat things about this trip is being able to go back and look at these curses and go, okay, are there things in our lives? And maybe that's one of the things that will come out of this video is that people will go, you know what? I have dealt with this, this, and this my entire life, and I can't figure out why. And then they go, wait a minute. My parents, my grandparents, my great-grandparents. Years ago, I did a training. I did not know this. My great-grandfather was a Freemason. There are curses, generational curses that come out of that because of the things they pledge. I didn't know that. And this person I knew was doing trainings on generational curses. She sat in the building. She said, have any of you had an out-of-body experience? Because it's very common for people who had ancestors or family members who were Freemasons. One of the curses is this thing that comes out as an out-of-body experience. And the one person, my uncle, goes, yeah, I had one because I was sitting in bed and I looked down and I was looking at myself. She said, yeah, that's one of these things that are very common. It doesn't, you get into it, I don't know where it comes from. I don't understand all of it. That's not my ministry. That's not what I wrap my head around. But you go, wow, are there things that tie to this? One of the people said, well, I'm not going to be able to make it to the conference. Can you record it? She says, no, I don't record them. They said, well, why not? Well, one of the curses in Freemasonry is you say, I will choke on my tongue or choke on my words if I ever share of these things. And one of the ladies whose father or grandfather had been in Freemasonry started to do these prayers in the office with the lady and literally began to choke and passed out on the floor, basically dead. They had to bring her back. She goes, what would happen if you're at home and you start doing these things and those demons or those curses start to manifest and you have nobody at home? She goes, that's why I don't record these things. But there's a reality to generational curses. Now that we chalk it up to genetics. I have a genetic disposition to alcohol. But what if your genetics are a spiritual code? What if that's what that actually is? Your genetics are actually a spiritual code, and that's why we can't completely understand it. But your genetics in some way, shape, or form are the spiritual coding in your system, and it's actually showing you the spiritual world in some way. Maybe it's a manifestation of the spiritual into the physical. I don't know. But why is it these sins a lot of times can be seen in genetic codes in your DNA? And you go, okay, that's kind of weird. I don't know. I'm not into that stuff that way, but I go, it's interesting. And you go, okay, so if so-and-so had alcohol and that one had alcohol and that one, maybe that's where it comes from. So we have to be aware of these generational curses and these cultural curses. And that was the neatest thing about this, was to see Jimmy put that together when we walked through there. To go, you know, last time I came through here, I was really angry. And I'm angry again, but on a different way. I'm feeling God move in my heart. I'm feeling a peace come in. And so, you know, I hope that this video will be able to minister to people. We're seeing the YouTube channel grow. And what was really neat was when we stopped at the museum, I had these with. And the lady at the museum goes, well, can I have some of your pamphlets? I'll put them in the museum so people who are traveling the Trail of Tears will find these pamphlets. And I was like, yes, you can. Of course you can. I did bring some of these. They're out on the table out front where the mints are, if you want to grab one. But it's just incredible to see this trip. We ended up going on further and further. We found an Indian princess's tomb. She was a Cherokee princess who traveled across the Trail of Tears. She must have, from what we can tell, she must have gotten sick after coming across the Mississippi River. They had some boats tip over at that point, too, and she's buried at this ground. Her dad's name was Bushyhead, and she was the princess, and she was buried there. There's this nice tomb, and that was another spot that was really hard when we got there and go, that's supposedly the point where the women had to decide to leave their babies on one side of the river or to go across and wade across the river and carry their babies as they went across. And many of them dropped their babies or would lose their babies as the current would sweep them, and then they would lose their babies. And so, you know, there was these more spots where we came across and go, wow, this is heavy. This is not what we thought it was. And so it's something that as we go ahead and do this video, pray for me because it is not easy. You know, one of the things that's interesting about these videos, we sit down, we film them, cool. When I have to go back and watch them over and over again, sometimes it gets really difficult. I did one not long ago about a woman who was from the Lower Sioux. It was when I was over with, oh my goodness, what's his name? Pastor over in Minnesota. Nate. Yeah, Nate. Invited me to meet some of the people over in his area. One of the native ladies shared this testimony of the things she had been through. And I have to sit there and listen to it over and over again as we edit and add the music and do all this stuff. And it gets heavy. It gets very heavy. So keep me in prayer as we do these things that, you know, you don't become overwhelmed with what you're doing. Because it is heavy. It's not easy. You know, you come in and we show it for 5 minutes. You go, wow. And you walk away from it. But when you have to sit there over and over again. We have some more things coming up. We are currently, when we were in Georgia, we met this family who's working on contacts out west with tribes down in Arizona and New Mexico. So that would be neat. Jimmy's actually down in Florida right now working with the Seminole Indians, which I think that's a first, like, door open for him. So I said, no, why don't you go down, open the door, and then we can come in later and build those connections when we can. So he's down doing that. There is this thing coming up in Alaska, which I still got to talk with him. He'll probably call me the week before and say, hey, are we going? And I'm thanks, Jimmy. But, you know, so there's more stuff coming up. It's growing, and I'm excited to see what God's going to do. And now summer's right around the corner, so today's spring, and tomorrow's going to be winter again probably. But summer's coming up, and so that's our busy season. That's when we hit the ground running. So I just want to thank you guys again for all the support and everything that you have been. Do not despise small beginnings is a scriptural verse that is very important. You know, God waits to see are we faithful with the little to give us more. And as Pastor Tim sits here probably some Sundays and goes, wasn't a lot of people here, but I'll stay faithful. I mean, he didn't even call me to tell me church was canceled last week, so that's fine. But was church canceled last week? Oh, you said it was earlier. You said nobody came. Oh, okay. Well, you didn't cancel last week. Good. I'll never cancel for snow. But yeah, there's Sundays where you come in and you go, well, you know, whatever. But he continues, right? We continue to come. Some of you have been very faithful to this ministry for many years. And there's an honor and a respect that God will give when you stay faithful to those things. And you don't go, well, church is kind of small today. I think I'm going to go find another one that has more people. You know, that's a reality. And we can't despise the small beginnings when God has the ability to bless us. Because he will say, hey, look, you didn't despise the small beginnings. Therefore, you were faithful with the small, so I can bless you with even more. And so just continue on those things and stay faithful and press on. Pray for Pastor. Pray for each other. That's probably one of the things that as I look at many churches now we struggle with is the fellowship aspect. Church gets done, we run out the door. And I'm not saying this church because you guys sometimes don't leave. But those aspects of fellowship where we take time to get to know each other and understand each other and where we come from and what's going on, those are important. And that's where we are able to help each other as brothers and sisters in Christ and do the things that we need to do. So, again, I just want to pray, but you be sober in all things, endure hardship, do the work of an evangelist, fulfill your ministry. Fulfill it, whatever that ministry is. Maybe your ministry is to sit at home and pray for people. That's not a bad ministry. When you look at somebody like me or Jimmy or even my friend Dr. Skonkin who goes into these areas that are very spiritual, we need prayer warriors. We need people who are sitting at home praying. That prayer covering is what keeps us going a lot of the time, you know, and you get out there and you see the witch doctors are doing their thing and you go, well, wait a minute. And then somebody says, hey, I was praying for you today. And, you know, if you know somebody in ministry or missions and you can send them that little message and just be like, hey, I was praying for you today, it goes a long way. So just fulfill your ministry, whatever it is. God, I thank you for this group. I do pray you bless them. They have been faithful. They have been faithful in the big and they've been faithful in the small. And God, I pray that you will bless their faithfulness. That you will bless their ministries, whatever they are. If there are people here who have a ministry of prayer, but they don't have quiet time because their house is chaotic or their life is chaotic, bless them with those times where they can have peace and be able to come to you in prayer. That they can fulfill that ministry. If there are people here who have other ministries, God, I pray that you will give them the wisdom on how to act on those ministries. And you'll open the doors and do the things that are needed so that they can move forward. God, I just pray that this church can be a springboard and a fertile soil for so many ministries that can come forward. That people can step out in faith and go, I don't know what I'm doing, but God told me to do it, so I'm doing it. And I pray that you will continue to fulfill so many of these ministries through people who want to fulfill their ministry. Again, God, I thank you for this ministry and what they have been a blessing to so many others, including myself and Pastor Nate and all these other people who have ministries. And I just pray that you will continue to bless them. In Jesus' name, amen.